we have a very special guest today. His name is Stephen Moore. He is a member of the Wall Street Journal editorial board. He is the founder of the Club for Growth. He has authored a number of books, including The End of Prosperity with his business partner, Art Laffer. He's a regular contributor on Fox News, CNN, CNBC, and others. And he's considered one of the leading conservative thinkers of our time. Mr. Moore, thanks so much for being with us.
Great to be with you guys today.
Hey, tell us, let's dive right in to politics here. Who do you think is the best Republican candidate for growth and economic expansion?
Well, that's a tough one. You know, I think that obviously Mitt Romney is, you know, the huge, huge front runner and is almost unstoppable at this point. So it's going to be really a question of who's better for growth, Mitt Romney or Barack Obama. And that's a pretty easy one because it'd be hard to find anybody who's been worse for growth than the current president. But, you know, I thought that I watched the debate the other night on Fox News. I thought Newt Gingrich was pretty strong. I thought he was very good on tax reform. He wants to convert Social Security into a personal account system, like an IRA type system where actually you own the money. It doesn't go into the so-called Social Security trust fund. I think that's fantastic. I like what Ron Paul is talking about in terms of cutting government spending because we have an addiction to overspending in Washington. So I guess I would take kind of an amalgamation of these candidates, but I think at this point it's a bit of a moot point because Mitt Romney's lead is so substantial.
No doubt about that. In terms of privatizing Social Security, I know you've been a proponent of that over the years. Tell me what that would, for our listeners, what would that look like?
Well, it's basically an option where instead of taking, 12% of your paycheck and sending it into Washington each paycheck, you'd actually get to keep the money and put it into an IRA account. So you'd have personal savings that would build up over time. And then you could draw it down when you retire. So I like that idea a lot.
So it would be an IRA account where you could choose whether you'd put it in a CD or you could put it in a mutual fund. You'd have the choice on the money is what you're saying, right?
That's right. Exactly. You have to save it. You can't go out and spend it or take it to Las Vegas and put it on a roulette wheel. But
right.
It's a personal savings vehicle like an IRA.
Interesting. Yeah.
By the way, that means the government can never take it away from you, right? I mean, in other words, right now you have no legal right to your Social Security. The government could take your Social Security away from you, but if it's in a personal bank account, they'd have to confiscate your wealth to take that money away from you.
It's interesting how you put that, because if I'm right, and I think I am, that the government has confiscated the Social Security Trust Fund, and it's just IOUs back to Social Security
exactly.
To pay it back.
You know, that's a really key point that I think that a lot of Americans don't understand, that there is no trust fund, that the money is in the trust fund is all just a big IOU. And then you have to ask the question, with $15 trillion of national debt already, where in the world is the government going to get the money to pay back the IOUs in the Social Security fund?
Well, it's obvious to me, and I'm sure it's obvious to you as well. They're going to rob that. Well, they've already robbed the trust fund, and then through entitlement cuts, they'll stop that from happening probably.
You know, this is a key point, and I'm glad we're talking about this because it's not talked about enough. But,
agreed.
You know, for young people, anybody listening to your show that's under the age of 35, Social Security is the worst investment they will ever make in their life, hopefully.
Yeah, right.
Because you're going to get a very, very low return. You could take that money quite literally and just place it under a mattress and not even earn interest on it, and you probably get more out of that investment than sending into Social Security, because they're going to have to, what are they talking about doing? Cutting benefits, raising the retirement age, raising the tax rate. Those are all things that for young people make a bad deal even worse.
Right. Let me ask you this. Do you know what Mitt Romney's position is on privatizing at least a portion of Social Security?
You know, he has not been very supportive. He's, you know, given some lip service to it, but he hasn't really come out in favor of it. And the other day in the debate, there was a little bit of a tussle between Rick Santorum on this, where Rick Santorum said, we can't afford to do this. And I'm like, Rick, we can't afford not to do it. But then, you know, Mitt Romney said, well, I think Rick Santorum is right. So I don't think that Mitt Romney has been as ambitious on this idea as Newt Gingrich. But it's something, as you said, I've worked on this issue for 20 years.
Right.
And I truly believe this is the only way. This is the only way we're going to solve this crisis in Social Security, is to allow people. And there are a lot of, it's my money, it's your money, right? Why shouldn't we be able to invest it as we want?
Right.
You know, that is a really good point. It's a really good point that you and I are much better stewards of our own money than certainly the government is with a $1.5 trillion deficit.
Members of Congress, members of Congress managing their retirement account. I sure don't.
Yeah, not so far here either.
I'd rather have you guys managing my money.
There you go.
I hear you. And as we shift to the market, obviously you're in the know. Our market is doing pretty well recently.
It is.
But fundamentally, there's not a whole lot of reasons for that to happen. Tell us why that's actually happening, or why you think that.
Well, I think, you know, the fundamental reason is we're finally crawling out of this, you know, mini depression that we've been under. You know, it's the natural course of events for things to get better when you fall into a ditch. I think almost everything that Barack Obama has done in response to this economic crisis has been exactly the wrong thing to do. He's made this a much more painful, much deeper, much more of a jobless recovery than we would have had if we had done the right things. But, you know, I mean, the great thing about our free enterprise system and our system of capitalism and our entrepreneurs and business owners and investors is, you know, even with all the weights that Washington puts upon them, they still are able to shrug it off and still continue to grow. Now, look, I think we should have much, much more rapid growth than we do right now. We're growing at about 2 and 2.5%. We should be growing at 5%, 6%, given how deep that recession was. But government right now is really what is inhibiting the recovery that we would normally be seeing. I mean, my goodness, during the Reagan expansion, the economy was growing by 5 or 6%. We were creating about 400,000 to 500,000 jobs a month, not 100,000, 400,000 to 500,000.
You just mentioned that President Obama, every move he's made has been the wrong one from the economic standpoint. Do you think that's because he's an ideologue, or do you think that's because he's just in over his head?
A little of both. I think there's no question he's in over his head. That, you know, he's probably I think the man has, you know, he's a great political success story. I mean, only in America could you, you know, get someone like Barack Obama or Bill Clinton or Abraham Lincoln that become president. But he just was completely unqualified, right? I mean, he's probably the least qualified person to be president in American history. He doesn't have any private sector background. Not only has he never started a business, I don't think he's ever even worked for a business. So why would we expect someone like that, who was a community organizer, to have even a clue about how to create jobs? And so I think part of this is just that he's completely not up for the job, but partly it's also because he has a deep ideology that is leftist, that is contrary to how you create wealth and how you create jobs. I mean, you guys know this. You're in the business every day.
Right.
You don't create more wealth and you don't create higher returns for people's investments by raising taxes, raising government spending, putting more regulations on businesses, right? That's counterintuitive.
Right. It astonishes me, Steve, As we look at what this administration is doing, how they think this could possibly, more regulation, more taxation, more stifling of business, how that could possibly grow the economy. Do you think
they hate business? I mean, a lot of these guys really hate business. They hate rich people. They hate wealth. They think businesses make their gains by cheating people. And I just think they think that government is the real creator of wealth, not private entrepreneurs and people who work hard and take risks and set out their own shingle. I mean, in my opinion, the real hero of the American economy is the small businessman and woman who, you know, takes those risks and goes out puts their sweat equity into a business to grow it. Those are the people who are the real heroes.
You said, I think when you were being interviewed at the New Orleans Investment Conference, you said Americans do not tolerate failure. Isn't reelecting Barack Obama tolerating failure?
Yeah, it is, and that's why I don't think he is going to be reelected, because I think, you know, the elections are always referendum on the incumbent, right? This is going to be an election about whether we give this guy 4 more years. Does he deserve 4 more years? Well, to me, the answer to that question is quite self-evident, but every American is going to have to make up their own mind. Now, look, if the economy gets a lot better this year, Barack Obama probably will be. People will feel more confident. They'll say, well, you know, this hasn't been so bad. So, but look, the last 3 years has been, in my opinion, a catastrophe. I mean, we still have, by my reckoning, you know, 20 million people without jobs, if you include the people who have just given up.
Right. Okay.
So it's been a really rotten 3 years at a time when we should have had a pretty robust recovery.
This is a different subject, but I'd love to get your take. The European debt crisis, how do you see that unfolding, and how do you see that affecting our markets in the next 12 months?
You're talking about the debt crisis in Europe?
Exactly.
You know, I've been on the record saying I think Europe is an inconsequential continent. I think Europe is yesterday, and Asia and America are tomorrow. And so I don't really believe that the Asia crisis is going to, you know, very adversely affect us. But I will say this. I do think that the reason the Asian crisis is important for European crisis is important for Americans to pay attention to is because it's a foreshadowing, right, of what happens in the U.S.
Right.
If we don't get our taxes under control, if we don't get our debt down, if we don't take seriously, you know, reforms in government. Look, it's very simple. Everybody in America can't be entitled to everybody else's money. And
right.
that's what's happened in Europe. I mean, right. Europe is just this massive entitlement state where nobody works anymore. Everybody's retired collecting government benefits, and the whole system is collapsing. Well, that's where we're going to be. You know, they're just a few years ahead of us. And I think the window is closing very rapidly in terms of making the kinds of reforms that are necessary. And that's why it's so important that we get a regime change in Washington, you know, in a year. Because if we don't get that regime change, at the very best, we're going to have to wait four more years to get real serious change. I mean, this is a president in 3.5 years who hasn't proposed virtually a single spending cut. I mean, I laughed this week when the president had this. Did you see this thing he had on reorganizing government?
Yes.
I mean, it was a joke. I mean, here's a guy who has added to the bureaucracy more than any president in history. He's passed this massive new $2 trillion entitlement plan that's going to add layers and layers of bureaucracy to our healthcare system. And now we're supposed to believe that this president is the one who wants to reorganize and streamline government? I mean, give me a break.
What do you think, and I'd love to get your opinion here on this, what did you think about the cover of Newsweek calling Obama's critics just dumb?
You know, I haven't read the article, but I did see the cover, and, you know, I was glad to see it because it just reinforces how left-wing the media really is. And, I mean, does anybody, here's the question I would ask you. Does anybody read Newsweek magazine anymore?
I guess their last three readers probably didn't buy it this month with that
right.
With that cover. But, all right, now we're coming up on a hard break here, but if folks want to find your book, The End of Prosperity, want to find more about you, is there a website that they can go to?
There isn't, but, you know, it's available on Amazon, and I'm really proud of it. I wrote that book with Art Laffer, and it's a really good, concise history of the last 25 years of our economy and what's caused growth and what hasn't. And I wish every presidential candidate would read it, and I wish that Barack Obama would read it.
Yeah, I wish he would, too. Now, and yeah. you often write in the Wall Street Journal as well, so if folks want to read your writings in the Wall Street Journal, they just buy the Journal, right?
That's right. I write every day for the Wall Street Journal on the editorial page. A lot of the review and outlook pieces are written by me, and we've got a great staff of people. But, you know, I always say this is going to sound self-serving, but, you know, for everybody who's listening, just take 10 or 15 minutes in your morning when you're drinking your Starbucks or you're on your Stairmaster, and just read those three editorials every day in the Wall Street Journal, because I always tell people, if you want to be the smartest person in the room, just read those editorials. That, you know, we cover politics, we cover the economy, we cover finances, we cover what's happening in Europe, and I just think we have some of the smartest writers and thinkers, and so it's a great way to keep up with what's going on in the world. And I know you guys read the editorial page, and I just urge your listeners to as well.
Absolutely, yeah, that's how you stay in the know. No question about that. It's quick and concise. Well, we're coming up on a hard break. We're talking to Stephen Moore of the Wall Street Journal today, and sir, thank you so much for being with us. We really, really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
All right.